You're very welcome along to another RTE Rugby Podcast. This week, coming to you from Melbourne, week two of the British and Irish Lions Test Series, and also our second podcast of this week. If you missed it a couple of days ago, I caught up with Ian Payton of the Sydney Morning Herald to get the Australian perspective on Saturday's first test win for the Lions and what to expect at the MCG this Saturday. Today, though, we have team news, we have fresh angles, and I have Johnny Murphy and Johnny Holland for company to dig into it. Guys, I'll get straight into the news itself because there's a lot to digest here. Team news came in earlier today. 9 Irish starters in the team. It should actually have been 10, though. Andy Farrell confirmed afterwards that Gary Ringrose withdrew himself from the starting lineup and the matchday squad after experiencing symptoms of concussion after training this morning. We'll talk a bit more about that, but I'll run through the teams. The top lines, Joe McCarthy misses out for the Lions, as does Mac Hansen, both foot injuries. Ollie Chessam comes in for McCarthy, and you have James Ryan stepping up onto the bench. Andrew Porter starts at loose head. Ellis Genge goes to the bench, and Bundy Aki is in for Sione Tuipulotu, who's also dealing with a little bit of a hamstring issue. So the team in full, front row, all Leinster front row, Andrew Porter, Dan Sheehan and Tadhg Furlong, Maro Itoje and Ollie Chessam in the second row, and the same back row as last week, Tadhg Byrne, Tom Curry and Jack Conan. The halfbacks, Jamieson Gibson-Park and Finn Russell, Hugh Jones and Bundy Aki in the centre, and the same back three as last week, James Lowe and Tommy Freeman on the wings, Hugo Keenan at full back. Also then, Joe Schmidt has a considerable heft to his pack. He's included Rob Valentini and Will Skelton and Dave Parecki in his starting lineup. Nick Champion, De Crepney, Jeremy Williams and Billy Pollard drop out of that starting team. Before we talk about who isn't there, we have to talk about Gary Ringrose. An incredible blow for Ringrose, fellas, who was playing so well coming into the test week. Then he had that concussion after the game against the Brumbies, missed out on the first test, came through the return to play protocols and played on Tuesday night, played just over an hour against the First Nations at Pacifica 15. And it was fascinating to hear Andy Farrell say it was just after training this morning that Ringrose came up and self-reported a concussion, which an incredibly selfless thing to do for the team and also probably an incredibly self-aware thing to do because this is probably something that wouldn't have happened 10, 15 years ago. A player coming up ahead of the biggest game, arguably, of his entire career. And, you know, by doing this, he's effectively ruling himself out of the third test as well next week. It's a fascinating story just to see, I suppose, how times have changed.
We both deal with concussion, and I think it's something you can't mess around with. So when Andy Farrell said, I mean, and he mentioned that I can do no more, I thought it was just, you know, typical of the times now, as you say. But I just feel sorry for Gary Ringrose. Like, he's, I think I said last time on that, you know, he's a test lion. Like, everyone thinks about his test lion, and he's not, you know. So, and you said there, like, you know, what are you supposed to do with him? He has symptoms again on a Thursday before Saturday and the following Saturday. Like, probably doesn't give him any time to come back, does it? Depending on what they do with secondary symptoms, I'm not sure. I actually don't know that part of the pro game now, but you'd have to feel from now. I think, like, selfless, definitely selfish, you know, it's his brain. And I think that's the part you do have to be. It is selfless, like, don't get me wrong, but you do have to look after yourself, and I think he's done the right thing. There are others that have done it in the past, an English winger, and, you know, no one is ever going to say, like, oh, what are you doing? Everyone's like, fair play to him, you know, and I think he'd echo that. But, yeah, he just has to look after himself, and fair play to him for doing it.
Yeah, I think in terms of that, there was even kind of a shift when, you know, in terms of, you know, from when I started to when I finished. You know, in that 11 years, there was starting to be a shift towards for the better of the game. But like when I started up until 6-7 years in this, you know, and, you know, we were probably all a danger to ourselves. This wouldn't have happened. You know, you would have given yourself every single chance. And even if there was a small little spark in a warm up, you would have kind of just got on with it. And I think this, you know, in terms of the bigger picture, I think what the Lions have done here and how Andy Farrell has put it in the public domain, I think it's a good thing because it shows that at the highest level that, you know, literally the highest level of our game, that someone is coming forward with this that could have easily just kept it to himself and move on. It's a really good thing for the overall game, you know, kids playing, you know, the ability to flag something like this when ultimately you know your own body, I think is a really good thing. Then on the kind of competitive side, you're absolutely gutted for Gary Ringrose, you know, because as you said, everyone would have thought, you know, coming into, and this is something on selection that we'll get in later, you feel that this is probably where everyone thought the test side was going to be, you know, similar enough for give or take what injuries are there. Yeah, just gutted for him. But I think overall and how they've put it out there with that honesty kind of is a good thing in the bigger, definitely in the bigger picture, as you know, concussion is such an issue in our sport.
Yeah, here's what Andy Farrell and Mauro Itoje both had to say about it. So Farrell was asked about Ringrose, and he said, as I was walking off the field, he came up to me, and once it's mentioned, that's that. He was asked, was there an incident in the game against the First Nations and Pacifica? And he cleared up, there was no incident. He was feeling good well in advance of Tuesday and fit and ready to play. No incident through the game at all, nothing yesterday and nothing this morning. But with these types of things, players are getting very good at telling the truth of how they feel. So it was a no-brainer to make the change straight away. And I think Mauro Itoje summed up the situation as well. He said, it shows the measure of the man to be so selfless. All we ask of us is to be selfless and put the team first. When push comes to shove, you see who really does it. Gary is a man who really did it. Johnny Murphy, I think you kind of hinted at it there. Like, it's the kind of story where you would have conflicting feelings about it, because first of all, there's the HIA process and return to play. And it kind of is a bad look how Gary Ringrose, he had the issues after the Brumbies game. He went through the return to play protocols. He was cleared to play against the First Nations and Pacifica. He came on, he played an hour. He didn't have any issues during that game. But there you are 2 days later, he's still experiencing signs of concussion. And you know, it raises the question again of do you start needing to bring it back to the old 3 weeks like it was way back in the amateur days, like it just an instant 3 week layoff if you're expected of having a concussion. The other side as well, it's obviously just gutting for Gary Ringrose, unlikely to play the third test now as well, having missed out on previous Lions tours in the past. And then on the other side, your admiration for him just goes through the roof with, you know, effectively removing himself from the biggest game of his career and the biggest moment that, you know, the moment he's been waiting for so long. And it kind of, it makes it easier for players to do this going forward. And it's the kind of incident where maybe in 5 or 10 years, the sport might have a lot to thank for, that in one of the highest profile games they've seen in, you know, that they see every 4 years, a player took the opportunity to put himself first.
Yeah, look, I think there's three things in that. I think first of all, the protocols are where they are. They've a lot more research than they did back in, you know, the days of kind of 3-4 weeks. But at the same time, you know, it's such a complex issue that some people can recover very quickly and fine, and there is a lot of kind of individual stuff with it within it all. And ultimately it lies with you in terms of how you feel, and you know when you get a spark or when you have a bout of dizziness, and sometimes there can be no rhyme or reason to that. And but yeah, I do think that with everything going on, all of the protocols are being looked at all the time, and whatever changes they need to make will be made. And an incident, to jump toward to three, an incident like this does show that continued kind of research, all of that is going on, then having certain protocols in place that, you know, this can happen. In terms of, you know, he's obviously very much a leader within all the squads that he's in. Leinster, Ireland, Lions, and I suppose you lead by your actions, and he's shown that from what he's done, because he wasn't 100%, and you know this is the decider, so you know those percentages do matter at this highest level. Then last, huge amount of admiration, but you're absolutely good and firm as well. Because as you say, this is the pinnacle of rugby. You know, it's bigger than, you know, in my opinion, the Lions is bigger than World Cups for people from Ireland and England, Scotland and Wales. And to get that test mark is huge. So you're absolutely good around overall. But I think this is, as you say, this is an incident that is as disappointing as it is for the individual, but how honest they're being with everything shows that this is okay, for the want of a better phrase, but this is part of our game, and it comes down to individually how you feel and the ability for you to stand up and say, look, I'm not okay here. That's a good thing in the overall and the bigger picture.
Yeah, and like Johnny Holland, given the size of the occasion, there could naturally have been a little bit of temptation not to hide Gary Ringrose's concussion in the sense of, you know, tell him it's okay and play him, but to just say he picked up a little bit of a hamstring in training earlier in the week and not have this being a big deal the week of a test match. It probably is important as well that Farrell and the, you know, the coaching staff have put it out there that this issue did happen this week. There's obviously a big spotlight on it now, but again, it's something that for the wrong and the right reasons, I suppose, is making headlines.
Yeah, like I think there's only one way to do it, and let's be honest, I think Andy Farrell, in fairness to him, doesn't do things that way anyway. And I think as like a player like Gary Ringrose, you don't want to be going around hiding from the fact your close family and friends will know, and then you're asking about a hamstring. Like, I think it's all sorts of, you know, upside down. But the one thing I would say is, you know, the protocols, I kind of wince at the protocols. Sometimes you see a fella getting a bad bang and they're back out the following week. And I understand like the 3 weeks down to 1 week and 12 days is based on the medical care they can get day in, day out and fresh and set up. I still don't know I don't feel great at all about fellas who get, you know, a nasty bang and you're back out there in a week. It just feels wrong without me being the medical practitioner at all or having the knowledge or experience on that. I think a lot of people, especially the group Progressive Rugby, would have a lot to say about that. I always follow. They've got good people involved there as well. So it seems wrong. But the one thing I would say in the positive sense is that it does show that the players are being educated and they're taking on board that education, because I've come across plenty of players, you know, obviously at an amateur level as well, mostly, but they'll say to you, oh yeah, but it's grand though, it's only a bit of dizziness, is it? And I'll just see if it's okay afterwards. And you're trying to tell them like that's not okay, because when you've had one, you'll understand why you have to step out. If you've had anything that drags on a couple of weeks, I've had one, two maybe, and it's not great, you know. So you don't want people having one or two before they realise what it is. And maybe it does show whatever with the protocols, but maybe it does show that the players are taking on board the education. And I think it's a very good example. Unfortunately, he has a brain injury, but a good example of how to deal with it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way of summing it up. It does put a bit of cloud, though, on what like feels like a brilliant day for Irish rugby. We would have been talking about 10 Irish players starting a British and Irish Lions test. Like we still have 9, an absolutely incredible thing. 11 players in a match day squad, and the Ireland head coach leading it all as well. And throw in the fact that there's 3 potential test players unavailable in Mac Hansen, Joe McCarthy and Ringrose now injured. You can look at the selection, and it very much looks like with a test series on the line and the Lions wanting to wrap this up with a game to spare, Andy Farrell is going back to the players that he trusts time and time again, and those are the Irish players. And it's something we spoke about last week with Tadhg Byrne and Tom Curry, and giving those experienced players the chance to impress. It's quite interesting. You could see the reaction over the last couple of weeks when Farrell has been leaning heavily on these Irish players, and it hasn't been universally popular. And I think when word got out that we might have been looking at 10 Irish in a starting lineup this week, the reaction was interesting, to say the least. Some people might say it's a safe call by Farrell going with what he knows, and for example sticking with putting his son Owen on the bench as well. But the flip side is that it's a potentially very, very brave selection, because if it goes pear-shaped, he is going to be feeling the heat desperately. And, you know, that's the two sides of the coin, I suppose, is it?
Yeah, massively. I think that there was always going to be this pressure on him, particularly from the English media in terms of how they go about their business, that if this didn't work, he was going to be, you know, they were going to go after his head. And so that has kind of been how things have transpired throughout the whole lot. I do think that this was probably going to be the maximum number, even with injuries and with guys fit. You know, you look at Blair Kinghorn, if he didn't pick up that injury, he probably would have been a line starter ahead of Keenan. But then he'd drop out because of his versatility, and then probably Matt Hansen looked like he was going to be the number 23 with his, you know, with that versatility to be able to play across all of the backfield. You know, I do think of it all, the one out of all that probably you look at, maybe James Ryan as potentially the one that of all, in terms of where people have and their form, that he's probably the one Irish person that you go, okay, well, that is the selection, in terms of he's, you know, he's gone to what he's used to and backing someone that he knows will perform for him. Because I think Cummins has probably, in terms of his form, been ahead of James Ryan over the last couple of weeks. But outside of that, you know, the guys he's backed, like Tadhg Byrne and those, like, they delivered last week. You know, Curry delivered last week. I think it's great for Jack Morgan to be involved. He's been one of the standouts all thing. But yeah, like, in terms of the Irish thing, we knew from when it was named that there was going to be Irish heavy. Like, that was just the reality. It's what, you know, even from his coaching ticket, coaches need to feel comfortable when it gets the melting pot of people that they trust and they have that relationship with. And they will always go back to that. And so far, Andy Farrell has been right. They've won all their games so far on tour. They're going into a decider, and if they win it 3-0, or they win it 2-1, or they win it this weekend, it'd be completely justified. But Andy Farrell, I would say, probably doesn't really give a shit what the media are saying, to be perfectly honest. Like, he's big and strong enough, and his record speaks for himself, that, you know, he's 100% earned the right, and he has the right to pick who he thinks is going to do a job. And ultimately for him, you know, professional sport's about winning. That's all he wants to do. So he's going to pick a team in his mind that is the best, in his mind, that will go out and get the job done. And so far, he's been proven right in every section that he's had.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he's listening to this podcast over the next couple of days before the match.
Yeah,
Johnny Holland. When you look at the three changes that have been made to the starting team, okay, the obvious one obviously is Ollie Chessam in for Joe McCarthy. That is an injury enforced one, and probably the next cab off the rank. It's the second row we kind of expected to go in there. Next, you have Bundiaki in place of Sione Tuipulotu. Farrell was a little bit kind of evasive on the reasons for this one. He kind of half suggested it was a form call, half suggested that Tuipulotu had a bit of a tight hamstring. Well, he said he had a tight hamstring, but when he was asked how tight was the hamstring, or would he have been able to play, he was kind of humming and hawing on it. But the one that kind of does stand out is Andrew Porter in for Ellis Genge. And no disrespect to Porter, I think most people would say that if you were to put the two side by side over the course of this tour, that Genge has probably been playing the better rugby. But when you look at the way last week's game played out, and an excellent start followed by the final 20-25 minutes really tailing off for the Lions, when you see Andrew Porter going in ahead of Ellis Genge, do you see that as just a straight selection call and Farrell thinking Porter's the right man to start this one? Or are you seeing it as Farrell wants to get a lot more punch and explosivity into the bench that didn't quite fire last week? And if you're looking for a big impact kind of player, Ellis Genge has been that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right with the second part. Like, when you look at the balance, I don't like, I've said this plenty of times, I don't like picking things this way, but maybe, you know, at this level, you have to be smart. Like, when you take, you know, James Ryan and Jack Morgan off the bench, and then you're looking at the balance of that pack of what's coming off, like, Genge will give you some punch when he comes on. And he brings leadership too, clearly, with what we've seen on some of the behind the scenes stuff and in the dressing room and stuff like that. But at the same time, I think, you know, there was a couple of calls in against him in the scrum, free kick and a penalty as well, which I don't think, you know, they can be outliers. Like, I don't need to do it again straight away in the following week, but maybe just a combination of things. And, you know, when Johnny was talking there about Andy Farrell, like, you know, he certainly doesn't care about what anyone thinks. I don't think he's a guy that would be going, geez, the English now need another selection. Like, I don't, of all the people, I don't think he'd really care. And interestingly, something that Brian Hickey says to me all the time is, you know, if you're going to lose, you lose it your way. And I think that's really reflected in Andy Farrell's selection. Like, he's picked his guys with his gut feeling, and it's been right so far. Like, so who are we to question him? And when I say we, who are the rugby population to question him after last week, Tyburn and Tom Curry? I think most people would just do well to shut up about it. And if he's wrong about something, let's talk about it after that. But he's been fairly good in his selections in the past. He's made brave calls. Remember Mac Hansen coming into the Irish team when no one would have guessed it, and he obviously trained well. Even things like Blair Kinghorn, like, I know he got onto the bench clearly, but like, even after his first half, I was thinking he's going to struggle. But like, he's such a Rolls Royce, what a player to watch. And when he's throwing passes over the top, they get intercepted or one across the face of it, and they got intercepted, you know, far the season every day, thinking, you know, all he has to do is put an arm around them and go, hold off a small bit, like, you're well able for it, pick your time. And it could be a conversation that in the background where we all think it's a huge selection call, he's just putting an arm around them and telling them to hold off, like, you know. So the Porter one, I think you could toss a coin on Porter and Genge. I don't think anyone would really care which one starts, which one comes on, once he doesn't play Porter for like 71 minutes, which he does for Ireland, but clearly not this time, you know.
I do think that I think very much that is a decision based on what you said in the second part, that Genge coming off gives you more power. I do think that Porter is very used to getting into the pace of the game from the start and potentially going, you know, like he's gone, you know, 90, 100 minutes before, like he is. So I think that him, you know, 55 to 65, then unleashing Genge with that, you know, with that controlled aggression in the carry just adds that bite. And you look at, I think there's probably more in terms of, I think from last week, I think the bench is more balanced in terms of what it has there to come off in terms of, you know, out and out second row, back row cover, the ability to move around. And then with Farrell and Kinghorn coming off, you have very much, you're not moving anything massively to, like, if Kinghorn's on the wing, he'll do a really good job. If he's a full back, he's class. And then in a decider like this, you would be a lot more comfortable. Well, I would be a lot more comfortable if there's 5 points in the game, you're ahead 5 points, and you're going to own Farrell to come off the bench and close it out in the last 15, then having to put Marcus Smith on at 10 or 15. I think the ability then to put Farrell into the centres and just have that control outside Finn Russell. I personally thought, and we spoke about it on the podcast right at the time, we always felt that Owen Farrell was going to be on the plane at some stage. He's just been unlucky this year. I think a lot of the stuff going around has been harsh. He's still class. He showed that in his performances. And I think he's very much a security blanket coming off the bench. When the game is in the melting pot in the last 15, 10 minutes, he'll just give you that experience and control to close that game out. Be it, you know, if it is a one score game, which I don't think it will be, but which he just gives you that control and that experience to go get the job done.
Yeah, and I think, as you mentioned, Owen Farrell there, like, to Andy's credit, the way he's picked the team this week, he has rewarded players who put in a shift on Tuesday night, even players who had to put in a lot of minutes. Gary Ringrose had to play more than an hour on Tuesday and would have been in the team, all things going to plan, this week. Owen Farrell played the full 80, and he's on the bench this weekend as well. Now, maybe other people might be saying that Scott Cummings might be unlucky over James Ryan. That's the other side of it as well. But, you know, on a sh putting faith in players off the back of a short rest to get the job done. It's interesting you mentioned Johnny Holland on Porter in the scrum and how Ellis Genge did kind of give away, I think it was a free kick and a penalty last week. I can't remember exactly, but it was pointed out earlier on today that you've got an all Leinster front row in Porter Sheehan and Tadhg Furlong. And the last time we would have seen Andrea Piardi in a big game, he was refereeing Leinster and the Bulls in the URC final. And he was quite pleased with what pictures the Leinster scrum were showing him that afternoon. Now, it's not an identical front row this weekend. Tom Clarkson had started the URC final as Tadhg Furlong this time round, but how much do you think that would have factored into Andy Farrell's plans that, that the last time Andrew Porter was being reffed by Andrea Piardi and those Leinster players as well, that the scrum was, well, squeaky clean in his eyes?
Yeah, I think referee analysis is important. I think if it's a 50-50 and something can tip you to the other side, then that maybe is what happened, you know. So I know, having worked with Dennis Foggs and John is obviously over there as a scrum coach, they're quite similar in how they scrummage. Their setups are clean and, they're not looking to do anything messy, and maybe having those combinations together is very important because, I obviously didn't play in the front row and maybe people will laugh now, but they shouldn't. I like my scrums, but no, but it's all about they have to do things together. And when a loose head runs off or if a tight head isn't ready, they have to be given out to each other. So there's a lot goes on in that, front three, front five, and the whole pack is an eight when they're scrummaging. So yeah, maybe something did come into it, but at the same time, it's a toss of a coin. If something's going to give him a gut feeling on which one he should have gone for, maybe it was ref analysis, maybe it was just having the three of them together. I'm not really sure. The only other one I would say on James Ryan, I thought he had a bit of a messy 10 minutes, obviously, as he got sin-binned. But Scott Cummins had a silly offside and he was claiming no way. And I watched it back, I was rewinding it because I wasn't sure if it was when he blocked it down. And then I thought a Lions player might have touched it and he was offside. But it wasn't. It was just offside at the back of the ruck. He's just creeping up and creeping up, and those things are you don't want to reward that. But at the same time, if you say that, then James Ryan had his couple as well. But when James Ryan rocked Salekai Lauto, I was like, maybe this is it. The physical punch that he had on him, they were kind of having a smile at each other going to the next line out. And sometimes we can't feel the impacts. You know what I mean? And he's a big player for any of the sides he's been playing for. Salekai Lauto, he's a big boy, isn't he? So maybe if there's a bit of a punch needed for the Valentinis and the Skeltons of the world, and James Ryan certainly has it.
On Ryan, actually, I know we've kind of spoken about him a couple of times in different chunks in this podcast, but it's something that I think has jumped out over the last couple of years that he's kind of stopped getting on the ball, but he's found what he's comfortable doing, and that is going around hitting rucks like an absolute menace for as long as he possibly can, and he's been very, very effective at it. And he probably isn't getting the credit, I think, maybe publicly, that he deserves. And I think if you look back at some of the biggest losses Leinster and Ireland have had over the last 2 or 3 years, I think one thing that might jump out in quite a few of them is James Ryan hasn't been on the pitch. Champions Cup final at the Aviva against La Rochelle a couple of years ago, he was the best player on the pitch for the first half an hour before he got injured. The quarter final at the World Cup against New Zealand, missed that through injury. There have been others in the last year or so as well, last year or two as well, when he's been absent when Leinster and Ireland have really, really struggled. And I suppose that just, I might, Johnny Murphy, I might put it to you, it kind of sums up maybe the amount of dirty work that has to go on around the pitch that maybe people aren't able to fully appreciate.
Well, I think Johnny's kind of analysis there is probably, said, very much disagree, like kind of put me back in my box in terms of what I was saying about Cummins. But I do, I agree with that. He does do a lot of unseen work, and his level of force in the contact is unbelievable. He really does push that. And sometimes there's detriment in terms of, discipline and stuff, but he really does push that edge. And everyone kind of needs that no-nonsense second row. Every club in the world is looking for it, just to have that kind of enforcer that just keeps getting up and just enjoys that physical side. He does that. He does a lot of the dark arts. And I suppose when you lay it out like that those games that have gone away from Leinster and Ireland, his non-involve. I also think he's a big, big leader within just in terms of his chat, but more importantly, his actions. He does kind of lead from the front on that physical. So he probably has a bigger frame than Cummins as well, in terms of just that physical side and that physical power. So he is going to give you that, and he knows the likes of Skelton so well in terms of all their battles for La Rochelle. So to be able to give that off the bench is going to be very important. Their lineout has been good. Well, probably bar Tuesday night. Obviously, there was a huge amount of changes, and even Jamie George said on his socials this week, on Wednesday, he was like, "I enjoyed every minute of that." Was a sign off. So, but their lineout has been very good for the majority, and he'll add to that. He'll add his experience coming on anyway when he gives that, you know.
You mentioned Will Skelton. It's probably a good time to talk about the Australian team itself. So Will Skelton, Rob Valentini back in, Dave Parecki in at hooker as well. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that this is going to be a far more powerful Australian team than we saw last week, particularly in the first half when the Lions were just getting over the gain line at will. And I suppose in response as well, when Australia had the ball, they just weren't able to get anything going. You'd young Tom Lynagh there on his first start, and I will leave the analysis of Tom Lynagh's performance to you, Johnny Holland. You might tell me what you thought of him, but my, I suppose, blunt opinion would have been you could have had one of the greatest out halves in the world standing behind that pack last Saturday night. He would have looked fairly average based on what his forward pack were giving him. But I suppose, what's the instinct on this Australian team? How much can they close the gap in terms of the physicality between last Saturday and this week, just by having Skelton and Valentini back in the team?
Yeah, I think they can close it. I think they might play a more possession-based game. I don't know if they're going to put the ball in the sky. I think they should if they're not thinking about it. But trying to
Well,
get up,
Max Jorgensen can claim a high ball. I'd be firing them over to him all day.
that's the thing. But like then you're asking a bigger pack to move more in transition, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. Maybe they'll have two ways about it. But if they get possession and they go forward with Will Skelton's of the world, then you know, they may decide to keep going forward and keep the ball in their hands, and then they struggle, they go to the air again, like, you know. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with their possession. But you know, you've touched on it there. I was probably critical myself anyway, and even on Twitter I had a comment that, you know, he'll change those halfbacks for next week, and they haven't. And you know, maybe that's because Joe Schmidt is saying, well, we'll give him more go forward ball, we'll give him a better pack in front of him, and things won't look so poorly timed and clunky. But if you look back at how they actually played last week, it was horrible to watch. You know, the timing was all off. Lino was carrying a lot. I think Dan Biggar said it, but I felt that when you're not in control as an out half, you carry or you ruck and you run away to things and you don't take control. And there was a lot of that throughout the game that I just wouldn't have been as pleased with. And when Tate McDermott and Ben Donaldson came on, like there was just different kind of comfort and feeling. Now they were chasing a game. So there's so many things that are intangible that you can't really compare. You know, if the other halfbacks come on, they can just throw caution to the wind. You know, I understand that. But I'm very surprised not to see Tate McDermott play. I thought he was a level above. I would have played him. I think he brings great spark. So again, is that a nod to the fact that it might go kicking and not go so fast with Tate McDermott? I'm not sure. But just back to Tom Lynagh, he had a tough week. So hopefully for his sake, Australia will get more parity in the pack, and then we'll see what he can actually do, because last week I don't think we saw it.
From the attack and an out half point of view, I suppose from an attacking point of view, I might ask both of you this. One of the pieces of analysis I would have seen of Australia and of Lynagh over the last few days was it was pointed out the number of times, for example, that he was getting the ball as a first receiver off second phase, and how that's not an ideal situation to be in. Can you and I suppose that the general point was this was showing up how unorganized and Australia were in that opening half. Johnny, can you explain why it's kind of not ideal to be in that situation?
I actually think the opposite. I think like if you look at Marcus Smith, I've said it to some of our players, look at Marcus Smith and how many times he touches the ball. Because when you're a defence and the other half touches the ball, it's a lot harder than if they just come around the corner. But what they're trying to point out there is that on second phase, when you haven't gone forward, your 10 doesn't want the ball at all. You know, it's kind of when you're coming around the corner and things are fast and it's just flashing across to you, your forwards haven't even made it yet. That's when you want the ball. But if you're standing there waiting and the ball's not there and your forwards are getting in your way and you're trying to get them out of the way, that's when you don't actually want the ball. But the alternative was to give it to a pack that was going to go back another meter, and then he's going to have to do something with it afterwards, you know. So I think, unfortunately, you know, it's all to do with the speed of ball. So if you're going forward, he certainly wants the ball in his hands. Like, as I said there, Marcus Smith is one of those guys, and you know, he just gets on the ball, shifts someone else, he's gone somewhere else, and you can't keep an eye on him, you know. So if the ball is quick, you want to be buzzing around and firing passes. But when the ball is slow, you certainly want your forwards to kind of make it up to you and get you go forward so that you can play. But I think that's what you it seemed like he was getting the ball and he didn't want it, you know, that they were kind of going around the corner, was still being flaked over to him, and he was like, what am I supposed to do with it? You know what I mean? So I'd have a lot of sympathy for how he had to play the game. And Johnny, it certainly makes life a bit harder for guys on the outside. Then afterwards, if you're getting the ball, you're going to dump it to someone else, and then you've centres who are just getting rocked, like, or wingers that can't get into the game.
Yeah, you're kind of obsolete. Your attack structure, if you're going backwards, ends up obsolete. Your options are just to carry close and then kick the ball away and hope you get trying to get something out of transition then. So, but that was one of the things when you're going back, I felt that they could have just kind of got up, gone around the corner, bounce back, kick. You know, it's very boring, but you can end up playing in between the tens and trying to win a territory battle, or, you know, just being a bit more basic. And it probably came from his lack of experience in that, in those kind of high pressure games, you know, at international stage, that he just needed to probably even slow it down even more, set something up, and then rely very much on their kicking end, because that's kind of your only way out, unless you're kind of going back, setting up rooks where you're trying to dominate, you're trying to, even though you're losing the collisions, you're trying to speed up ball at rook time, which is more or less impossible, and you've kind of got nothing to do. Your only options are to shoot back down the short side, where you're hoping to kind of get after their fold, but your options are very limited. And when you saw him carry, it was like he carried, looked outside, there was nothing there because the forward hadn't got around him, and then he ends up going back to where the rook is, and you're back to where you started anyway. You're you know, so they, for what they're trying to do, I think that you have to have go forward. That's where the likes of Valentini and Skelton are going to be massive for them. That if they can get go forward, forces the defensive line to go back. And then if you can play into the middle of the pitch then off your 15, then you're opening up both sides to attack from. And it gives, you know, your back three the ability to come into the game on the blind side or on the 15s if someone shoots. So it is one of those ones that without any go forward, your 10, it's just going to be a horrible day for your 10.
The only thing on that, Johnny, you've kind of said it there, he's ducking back in, then your general's on the floor and no one knows where he's going. There's no barking around the place. But I think in more experienced 10, and, you know, let's get it out in the open, he's more experienced than I am. It's easy to say from the out. But like if you had Finn Russell in that Australian team, he'd have been back to shorts, like kicking into dangerous areas when the fullback was closing the same way and stuff. Now, everything is easier when the ball is slow. 15 doesn't have to close, winger can stay off. But they would have found a way to find some bit of a spark. It might not always work. You'd be trying things and it doesn't work. And we've been critical of tens doing that in the past. But I don't know if there was much kind of endeavour to get them out of that either, you know, through their contracts. That's why I thought they would have changed them.
And I think with the rules in terms of, you know, we're obviously used to now that contest in the air, you can get quick ball off winning your kick battle, because you can flashback, as Johnny said, someone like Finn Russell just... Hold on, Larry, lad, slap back behind, we'll kick a box kick, or I'll drop back off that, kick a tick, and then get up and try and win the scraps on the ground. Very boring, very basic, but if you can win that kick battle or win those scraps that come from the ground, then they're all going back, you're going forward, and that's where your quick ball can come. And then you can play off 10 into the middle of the park, or you can get to the edges very quickly in that unstructured place. Very boring, but... it's about winning a game. And I just think that lack of experience cost Australia just to go, okay, let's just fucking kick the ball here. Let's just, everyone calm down, kick the ball. Let's get our hands in the air, try and win that battle, and then go from there. But yeah, like it's not much of a spectacle, but it can create that quick ball for you in that kick battle if you win it.
Interestingly, I think Owen Farrell would have actually, he's the kind of player that you pick out of a lineup there now, take out of that. Even his,
well, he kind of did it in parts on Tuesday night, because the pack were getting kind of knocked around a little bit. He had to take that on.
The left foot chip for Jamie Osborne's try. I was like, with the triple threat at the line, like, he's been kicking a lot. The people might think they're aimless and they're putting, but like, you know, the Crusaders, you talk about it. Tyler came over, Johnny, you remember all that around. Coffin Corner, and just putting them under pressure, making them kick out and restart. And some of the kicks he puts through, people might not understand them, but Owen Farrell understands them, you know, so maybe Australia could pick them too.
Just because we mentioned out halves behind struggling packs, how much are you enjoying seeing Finn Russell play behind a pack that's just giving him the most beautiful platform? Like, he had the time of his life in those first 40 minutes.
He's just so good to watch. And I actually would love to see more of Blair Kinghorn in that kind of scenario as well. He's just so good with Toulouse, and I know he was a bit loose on Tuesday, but when he got back into the game, he was really good. But Finn Russell, the pass, the platform from Ty Furlong's at the hot potato, I think even you see, look for the kick, get back square at the line, and then throwing over a couple of defenders, it's just insane. You can't teach many people that.
It's his ability, as Johnny said, just to get square on that pass is just like he kind of, it's the old school. You saw it from Farthing, right? That old school double pump, or the ability just to drop the ball on his foot really late, that just puts all, like, if you're defending in that situation in the 22 where you're trying to bring line speed and he's either had a double pump or he threatens to drop the ball to your foot, automatically you just stop on your heels. And that's the last thing you can do in the 22. And that's where he just looks so timeless on the ball that it's just like, ah, yeah, I'm kind of, and it's just absolutely beautiful to watch. His one kick for the Joe McCarthy one was probably the one that you can pick
I
out and
mean,
go, that was, I know it's hard coming from that side, but that was the one that you go, like, it was close to perfect performance, but that's just the one that if he had landed that in Joe McCarthy's hands, you would have been like, that was one of the best displays from a Lions 10, like, in the modern era, you know?
yeah, it would have been. It's a great point, actually. Final couple of points, and it's one on the game on Tuesday night, actually. It like in fairness to the First Nations and Pacifica side, they gave a solid blueprint of how to really go after the Lions. Now I know you're talking chalk and cheese here in terms of the players that were on the pitch. It's two different teams essentially, but one of the main discussion points for us afterwards was there were a handful of players on that First Nations and Pacifica team, and all you could help think of was, why in the name of God are they not playing for the Wallabies? Why was Taniela Tupou out there playing on Tuesday night, absolutely bullying people? Lukan Salakaloto, Darcy Swain was absolutely brilliant. There were a handful of players where you're looking at them going like, how are they not playing in the tests?
That's exactly what I thought. And I don't know why Tupou came out of the camp. I don't know, is there something more going on there because he got dropped out of it a bit, and maybe someone said in media just needs to show that he wants it. I don't know, was it a general comment or did he just get caught saying the wrong thing? But like, I actually said to someone on the phone yesterday when they asked me about it, I was like, if you're Australia, you can't leave Taniela Tupou out of a squad. Like, you can't be leaving some of these monsters. They obviously suffered from it last week, so brought back in their bigger players with heft. Like, and it's interesting. Then you've got, I think on Tuesday they show that if you bring a physicality, like the Lions with all their lovely play, it does slow them down and it brings them into a bit of a dogfight. I was actually doing some research on some, a blog on rugby, and it's more nutrition one, but some of the research shows that bigger players win games. Like, it literally shows that body composition and bigger players, stronger, more power, climb the ranks into the elite, and then they also win games because of their size. Doesn't surprise anyone, does it? But maybe you should pick them if they're there.
Yeah, and they played with a chip on their shoulder. Like, they brought
Yeah.
that from the start. Like, it was clear, like, we're getting after this.
The Pete Samu stuff. They even said it after the match. Like that was a motivating factor. Even if you have to manufacture that edge and that grudge, like it works a lot of the time.
It's only a tiny little percent that you need sometimes in these, like, that's a, these tight games. So, but yeah, they really did play with that. But look, they're going into a 2 year thing now. Les Kiss is obviously going to come in, so they need to kind of widen the net a bit if they're going to have a successful home World Cup and decisions like that. You need to figure out personalities. If there is an issue, as you say, like, someone obviously has Johnny said it, they have in the media, oh, well, he needs to show he wants it. But like, that could just be a personality thing. You have to try and figure out how to get inside those guys' psyches and allow them be themselves within the correct constraints that, they're not affecting the group. But look, I don't know the ins and outs of that, but it is stuff like that that they need guys of that stature and size and power if they want to succeed. And Joe Smith and Les Kiss's game plan very much be on those lines where, power and speed very, very important.
Yeah, and I think it's something if the Lions are just as comfortable winners this weekend, I think we'll be talking about it a little bit more next week. One last bit I do want to talk about before we finish up, and it's one for you, Johnny Murphy, as well. But just Jamie Osborne, like a late call up into the Lions squad. I know Thomas Clarkson had a brilliant like just a brilliant day for him as well, making his debut. But for Osborne to start, like starting alongside Owen Farrell in a centre, a couple of weeks after getting your last minute Lions call up, you scored two tries. One of them was like a brilliant latch onto that kick. A proud day for himself and the family, and obviously I'm just asking you because obviously you would have coached him at Nace, and a proud day for Nace rugby as well.
Yeah, like a massive. I actually met his dad on Saturday morning at a breakfast the club put on for the match, and the family are just beaming, and it's great to see Andrew was there as well, and his other younger brother. It's just amazing, and you don't realize the buzz that it's created in the area within the rugby fraternity. It's incredible to see. Like you meet someone from the rugby club and, you know, in a shop or whatever, and they'd be, you know, just chatting or whatever, or a parent that you know from the area. And you wouldn't, you know, usually just be like, "Hi, how are you?" But everyone is actually talking about it and how proud they are of them. And to put in a performance like that, you know, play multiple positions, been moved out of centre onto the wing, you know, because of injury, showed, you know, why he was brought up. But in terms of the area, the club, all his family and everything, they couldn't be prouder. But it was a really, really cool moment watching it. I watched it with my kids here, and my eldest fella AJ plays with Will, his younger brother, in the under 10s. And like, you know, even watching AJ see it, like, it was really, really cool. Like, it's a really nice moment. And look, a couple of injuries with the versatility has, you know, who knows what happens for number 23 next week. But like, first things first, he got his cap and he played incredible. But we're all so proud of him. And it's just like, I think the local area, there's a real buzz around the local area from the local fraternity because of it, which is really, really cool to see.
Can I jump in?
Yeah,
Jamie Osborne is just one of those players that you put him at the next level and he do the same thing, and then you put him at another level and he just does the same thing. He's been incredible. Like some people didn't want him at centre and full back and all the rest of it, and then like, what's his position? His position is wherever they want to put him. He's just a really like an athletic player that I think has gone. I wouldn't say it's gone unnoticed. He's clearly on a Lions tour, but like, people don't actually give him the respect. If that was Suwalihi that pulled the ball out of the air for Detroit and finished it, we'd be talking about him and look at how athletic he is. And he is a powerful boy. He had one carry there at one stage. I can't remember when it was, but he just decided to go hard, and there was a collision. But like, Jamie Osborne maybe doesn't have the out and out power that he has, but look at his athleticism. Like, can we not, you know, recognize that and give him more time, because he clearly just rises to whatever level he's at.
Yeah, yeah, and then technically he had one tackle on the edge where they got, you know, they got the double poach with the two lads over. It absolutely melted your man in a like picture perfect tackle technique. Like, so he has, as you say, Johnny, he just has that ability to stay at that level. You know, his performance level is always at 7, 8 out of 10, wherever he's playing, whatever position he's playing, and he's just so consistent. It's I think that versatility is such a quality in a player, and it shows you kind of not only his physical attributes, but his mental attributes, be able to understand and, you know, understand the backfield cover required and then pop into the center as a 13 and defend so well there. I think it's something that is probably underestimated from, just the mental capacity that is needed, and his rugby IQ needed to facilitate his movement in all those positions and just fit in so seamlessly.
Johnny Holland, you mentioned like I suppose he could be a bit deceptive. People don't fully appreciate maybe the size and speed of him. And it was actually Owen Farrell himself who, after the match, one of the Irish journalists asked Owen, just what was your general impression of playing with Jamie Osborne, getting to train with him this week, experiencing him and all that. And the first words out of his mouth were, he's a hell of a lot bigger than I realised. Like, it is that deceptive size. But what I've actually really enjoyed about that match the other night is just how much playing for the Lions meant to some of those players who had just been late call-ups. We got the chance to speak to Darcy Graham a couple of days before the match, and I felt so sorry for him when he had to go off early in the game. Thankfully, he got a try for himself at the very least, but he was being asked, for example, about the criticism of all the late call-ups and, you know, what it really means to be a Lion, and people kind of just coming in because they were close nearby to Australia over in New Zealand, some of those Scottish players. And I actually loved his answer. He said, "You know what? I really don't care. Like, by tomorrow, I'm going to be a British and Irish Lion. No one can take that away from me." Same as well. We spoke to Tommaso Clarkson. I should call him actually after the match the other night. If people didn't realize, that's the fun fact. His name, Tommaso Clarkson. But as he was talking to us the whole way through, I could just kind of spot he was clutching the Lions cap that he had just won. I mean, squeezing it down in his hands, and was just kind of like fondling it away as he was chatting to us. And he was just absolutely buzzing. He played maybe just under 10 minutes in a Tuesday night match for the Lions. He doesn't care. He's a British and Irish Lion. And I have to say, I left that match feeling uplifted from that side of things, and also just how well the First Nations and Pacifica side played and really threw themselves into that game. It was a really, really enjoyable experience, and so much different to a test match, but equally as enjoyable in a very different way.
Funny, because you think, like, you know, the First Nations and Pacifica, they're obviously, like, it's a lot on their heritage and why they're up for the game, and like their culture is enforced. And the Lions culture, sometimes you can wonder, how are they going to come together? You know, because it stands for a lot, and there's a huge amount of tradition there, but, like, you know, you don't identify it for 4 years at a time, and then you're asked to just go in and, you know, bleed red, like, and be a Lion. And I think some of that pride will come from being selected and the actual being good enough, you know, being around the players that you get to be around. They're the best players of the four nations, like, you know, but there clearly is still a tradition to it. And I think Darcy Graham, maybe some of the emotion was because of the couple of weeks that he'd had, or maybe the emotion is just because, you know, he finally became a Lion and it got taken away from him again, like, you know. So I do think it means a massive amount. And when Owen Farrell spoke afterwards, I think he was quite good as well, you know, what it kind of means to them and why you play for the jersey and everything else. I know he's kind of indoctrinated into the whole thing now, playing the 20 times or whatever with the Lions. It's absolutely incredible. But yeah, it's great. It's great to see how much it means to them, because we're here at home going, you know, looking at the matches, and sometimes the stadiums are a bit empty and you're thinking, like, you know, can it turn out and make it the Lions that we watch on the DVDs? Like, and I do think the second test is going to be one of those big, big moments. It's going to be full, and it's going to be very physical.
Yeah, I cannot wait to get a glimpse of the MCG full on Saturday evening. Fellas, thanks a million for joining us. It's been great. We'll leave it there. Before we go, quick word, give me a prediction. Are we gonna be going to a deciding test in Sydney next week?
No.
No, but will it be 8 points or something? You know, Johnny, actually, maybe you were thinking more around how much Australia wouldn't score against the Lions last week. I was looking at the game going, oh, Johnny's prediction is so on the money here. And then I think they scored again. I was like, that's grand. It's near.
Yeah, I was bang on with 2 minutes to go to win the raffle prize. At the thing, I think it was a bottle of whiskey or something. And I was like, yes. And then they scored last minute. I was like,
Yeah, but yeah, 27-19. Was it? I was like, yeah, that's. Yeah. I'm trying to get my own prediction in there, but I think it'll be outside the score, but just about.
Yeah, I'd be the same. I think it'll be closer. It'll be one of those games that are a bit closer for 60 minutes, and then they'll pull away, and kind of 9 to 12 points would be my kind of spread for them.
I actually think it's going to help the Lions. Sorry, now going on, but it's going to help them having that structure on the game. I think they're going to have to go 3-6-9 or stay in the game in the second half. I think they have to stick to their kicking game and structures and stuff like that. So I think it's going to help the Lions in the long term.
I'm going to go Lions clean sweep, but I reckon a one score game. I have a feeling this one's going to be nice and tight, and I hope it is as well, because I'd love to see a real bit of jeopardy heading down the stretch at the MCG. Fellas, thanks a million for joining us. A reminder, kickoff 11 a.m. live blog report and reaction on rte.ie/sport, and as well on the RTE news app. We'll speak to you again soon.